Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice, afternoon edition. I'm your host, Don McGuire. We got a hell of a show for you today, and man, I got one of my favorite fighters of the sport on, because he's not one to keep his mouth shut, but you know what, when you think about it and you look at what he posts, it's nothing but the truth. And you got to hand him that. You know, he's never fought a slouch. He's always looking to get one up in life, and I'm always honored to have him on the show. With that being said, welcome Julian Lane. Julian, what's happening, brother?
Hey, man, it's an honor to be on your show, man. Thanks for having me. It's always a good, last show was great, man. Looking forward to it, man. Everything's going well, man.
Yeah, you know, I kind of want to, last time we didn't talk any drama or this and that, and I generally don't, but it's really not drama, because when you look at the situation with Jimmy Sweeney, you were supposed to fight him, he backed out. You know, in any aspect of the sport, if you back out of a fight, you know, that's just basically saying the other man is a better man, in my opinion, unless you have an injury. Was there an injury that was involved with Sweeney backing out, or did he just back out to back out?
Well, you know, this is the whole thing with that, man. I gave Jimmy the rematch, you know, after I beat him. I gave him a fair rematch, you know. And, you know, we'll get back to that. But, you know, He ended up taking a fight with another opponent, man. He signed a fight to fight Sean George at lightweight title. He wants to get, so the plan for him, he wanted to get three titles, you know, and the rumor was he wanted to get three belts and retire. You know, he held the super middleweight and the middleweight title before I beat him, and then I took the middleweight from him. Then, you know, gave him the rematch. He got the belt back. And, you know, in the ring, he's like, yo, you gave me the rematch, I'm going to give you yours back. You know what I mean? And I sat in the hospital for about 4 days after that, because I had to get surgery because I had a broken jaw. And that's when I signed my contract, you know? Like, and they held it over my head, too, because, like, I was literally, like, laying in the hospital, like, not knowing if, like, I'm going home or not. You know what I mean? I didn't have a plane ticket booked, you know, because I had to miss my flight to get surgery. And the promoter, were going to book me another flight to get home. You know, that way he could take care of surgery and not hop on a plane, right, you know, with a broken jaw and have to fly 15 hours with a broken jaw. So, you know, long story short, you know, of course I wanted to fight with Jimmy, but they wanted me to sign, like, 2-year contract, man. So I was like, no, I'm not signing 2 years, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
After all, you know, after this, like, after everything that, you know, you guys put me through, you know what I mean? Jimmy not making weight, things like that, you know, they were constantly on me the whole time I was there. Hey, are you on weight? Are you on weight? Of course I'm on weight. Then your fighter shows up, not on weight, you know what I mean? 5-6 pounds over. And, you know, like I said, they sent me to kind of do, you know, after about 3-4 days laying in the hospital, you know what I mean? I'm like, all right, you know, we ended up working something out. We got it to a year. We signed it to a year. 1 year with BKB. My next fight was supposed to be September 8th at the O2 Arena with Jimmy Sweeney for the title, for the trilogy match. And that was probably, you know, the surgery was in March. So it was like 6 months out. You know, that gave me plenty of time to get my jaw healed and get back to training and, you know, get back for that title fight. But, you know, a couple months go by and I see a post that, you know, Jimmy's fighting Sean George for the lightweight title. And I'm like, you know, that's new. What's this? You know what I mean? Like, so I hit the promoters up, you know, because they haven't, you know, contacted me. You know, I kept hitting them up. Hey, what's the word, man? The fight's still on, right? The fight's still on, right? And, you know, no response. And then I saw that post. So then I hit them up after that, and they were like, the fight was there for you to have. I was like, huh? Like, what do you mean? I've been at, like, we signed the contract for the fight, and I've been contacting you guys every day, like, trying to figure out, you know, get the itinerary, you know, get my plane tickets booked and everything. And, you know, next thing you know, I wasn't fighting. And I was just like, you know, that's some shady stuff right there.
It is.
Just, yeah, so that's what that came down to, man. You know, I posted all the pictures.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but didn't you already have a signed contract?
Yeah, for sure. I already had a signed contract. And it was for 8,000 pounds, which is roughly 10 grand. And, you know, it was like, I found out like 4 months later, man, like 2 months before the fight was supposed to happen, you know, that's when I seen the post that he was fighting Sean George. And I'm like, what is this? You know what I mean? Why? Whoa. And that's what everybody told me the whole time. BKB, they're not going to give you the title shot. They're not going to give you the trilogy. You know, they bring you back here. They got the belt back. They're not going to risk him losing it anymore. And, you know, they did the same thing with Melvin Gallard. You know, Melvin used to fight for him. He fought Jimmy a couple times, you know, and then after that, they, you know, they really had no use for him anymore, and they, you know, lowered his purse and everything, man. Like, they started treating him way different, you know, treating him like making him fight for crumbs and all that stuff, you know what I mean? So it's basically like, I was like, I'm tired of fighting on the Jimmy Sweeney show, man. You know what I mean? Like, since y'all not giving me the title fight with Jimmy, well, I'm going to go over here with Rogue Elite because they're offering me a world title fight against Melvin. So, yeah, I'm going to take that fight. And it's in the same month as September, same as when I was supposed to fight Jimmy. So I've been training. I'm ready to fight. And, you know, it works out. And, you know, I got 3 kids, man. I got a family I got to take care of. I just sat out 6 months, man. I need a fight, man. I can't be waiting around for you guys, you know, to say I'm fighting and then tell me I'm not fighting. You know, what happens if I, you know, BKB offered me a fight in November? They were like, pull out of the fight with Rogue Elite. We'll book you for November. I'm like, no, I don't trust you guys. You know what I mean? Like, what happens if I pull out and then you don't fight me in November? You know what I mean? Then I'm 7-8 months out without a fight. You know what I mean? It's time for me to get busy again, man. You know, they're just like kind of, yeah, all that stuff, man. Jimmy's their little in-house champion, man, and they, you know, they patent his record. You know, so they just, that's it, man. It's the Jimmy Sweeney show, man.
It really is, you know, and I've noticed that in a few promotions, you know, you go back, and he's my brother, and like I said, I'm transparent. I don't talk shit. I'll say the same thing to Juan Archuleta that I would say to anybody else behind their back. I'll say it to their face. You know, you look at when he was in King of the Cage. Yeah, he was a 7-time world champion, 3-time division, or 4-time division champion. But that's King of the Cage. You step up to Bellator, you step up to the UFC, it's a clean slate. It's a whole new ball game. You know, you got a different aspect, different stable of fighters. And, you know, I heard him make a comment the other day that kind of took me off guard because King of the Cage really protected him in that aspect. I mean, he's a tremendous warrior, don't get me wrong. I love him to death, and I think he's going to be a world champion. But there are promotions that do protect their fighters, and I think that's a situation that doesn't need to occur in this sport, you know, because it doesn't give to the gain of the fighter. It kind of, in my eyes, it holds them back. You know, it doesn't give them an opportunity to grow to where they need to be. You know, another thing you brought up that kind of caught my eye, and it's even happening in my world, is the exclusivity deal. You know, I'm not one for contracts that really bind me for more than a year. A lot, you know, I've been offered positions with a lot of major promotions, and they're all 3-year exclusive contracts. You know, you can't do nothing with nobody else. Well, you know what? I've seen those types of deals, and I'll go back to a promotion that I was part owner in, and that's Global Proving Ground with James Jefferson, Ron Van Cleef, and Dan Severn. Right. What they would do is they would sign fighters to a 2-year deal, and you'd be lucky if you fought 2 times in that 2 years. And in the meantime, when you did fight and got paid, they took back money because they made you travel with them. So they took back money for housing. They took back money for food. And so you remained broke. I mean, how is a fighter supposed to get ahead in that type of aspect? So when you look at exclusivity deals, how does Julian Lane propose, you know, or give a thought to the promoter in that aspect?
Yeah, man, it's like, you know, the first time I fought Jimmy, man, they brought me in. They bring in MMA fighters. They want him to lose to Jimmy. They try to build his record, but unfortunately, he ran into the wrong one, and you know, I got the belt. And you know, the one of the promoters, Jim Freeman, he actually sits ringside and corners Jimmy Sweeney. So it's like that threw me off too. Like, dang, why are you cornering this guy? You know what I mean? You're a promoter. Why are you cornering the guy? And if you can go back to my last fight and listen to the commentating, you hear two of the judges, I mean, well, two of the commentators saying that I won the round, a couple rounds, but then Jim Freeman, his manager slash promoter, steps in on the mic, on the commentator's mic, and says, no, all three judges scored that for Jimmy. Every time the commentators was like, that's Lane's round, Freeman jumped in and said, no, that was Jimmy's round. So, like, why is the promoter telling, you know what I mean, scoring the card over the commentators and the judges, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
that's just when I realized, like, man, you know, they're not, you know, they're not on my side, man. Not at all, man. No matter what they tell you, you know, and that's not how you do, that's not how you do business, man. You know what I mean? Like, because you're not going to get nowhere. Like, who the hell is Jimmy Sweeney, man? Nobody knows who that guy is, man. Like, he's known in Ireland, man. I'm known around the world, dude. That's what I want. You know, I want to be the world champ. I want to be well. I want to be a legacy, a world legacy, man, not just somebody known in my backyard. You know what I'm saying? That's why I fly 15 hours to England to fight this guy in his backyard, you know? That's what I've been doing my whole life, man. You know, that's like, that's, he calls himself a traveler. No, I'm the real traveler, man. I'm the one jumping country to country, man, taking fights. I'm going to Russia, going to England, you know, things like that. So I'm always up for the challenge, man. I'll never turn down, you know, and I rematched him. And I, you know, I crammed a 3-week camp in, man, for that fight. I could have backed out, you know. The smart thing would have been sit, not take the fight, let them vacate the belt. But I'm a more of a man than that, you know what I mean? But, you know, and as a fighter, you know, and making decisions like that, you know, that's not really the smartest decision at all. But, you know, it's what I did, man. I honored my word, you know what I mean? I told him I'd give him the rematch on that day, and I showed up to fight, whether I was in shape or not, man. And, you know, it's like, and then I get there, he doesn't make weight, you know what I mean? And you can't beat Jimmy without even knocking him down 2 times. You got to knock him down at least twice to win that fight in his backyard. And that's another thing. You know, one other thing, when I had the middleweight title, I was like, okay, if I'm giving him the rematch, how about my middleweight belt against his super middleweight belt? But they make this big thing about it. Oh, no, that's impossible. How are you going to do 2 separate weight classes, a super fight? I'm like, it's called a super fight, man. He's like, well, how are we supposed to match the weights? I said, oh, we can just meet in the middle. I'll jump up the super middleweight. It doesn't matter, man. I'll put my belt on line. That's all it is. You're just putting your belt against my belt, man. It doesn't matter what we're weighing. And they're like, no, that's impossible. We can't do that. But then, look, 5 months later, they're doing a super fight with the lightweight in the middleweight. So, what do you, you know what I mean? They're hypocrites, man. You know, this is, like I said, the Jimmy Sweeney show, man.
Yeah, it truly is, man. And
it's crazy,
you know,
man.
It's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you, because, you know, it's weird because a lot of people go, oh, you're just a journalist. They don't realize, like you do, that I shoot, I do the inner workings, I matchmake, I do different things. So it's like, I love to hear, you know, the way you speak when I have you on the show. That was one of the reasons, man, I saw that fight, and it was like, man, I'd always admired your career, but I was like, man, I got to get him on the show, man. I have to. And the first time I had you on, you know, you were like, why aren't you going to bring up this? Well, shit, that's the past. But you know what? If it's the present, I'm going to bring it up. And I felt
right,
this
right.
was relevant to bring up because, to me, you truly
Definitely.
Are the bare knuckle world champion, man. I don't and he
Thanks,
can't
man.
Take that from you. I mean, you deserve
For
that,
sure.
and I don't think nobody can take that. Hey, you're welcome.
And,
you know,
and that's the crazy thing, man. I don't mean to cut you off, but he was, you know, they make so – he was – they talk about how he how I'm a sore loser, how he is humble and this and that, but, like, he had no respect for me until he beat me and got the belt. When I beat him, all they did was make excuses, man. Oh, I was out of shape. Oh, this and that. You know what I mean? It was just, oh, it was a fluke. You got 2 flash knockdowns. You know what I mean? Like, no. You know what I mean? One, like, all they did was make excuses, man. And then what happens after he beats me? I shake his hand. You know what I mean? I'm always humble in defeat. I'm gracious in victory, humble in defeat, man, all the time. So, like, for me, you know what I mean? Like, that's tough. That just shows who he really is, man. He's only humble when he wins. And not even that, man. Not even, I wouldn't even say humble, man. He's fake, man. You know what I mean? And, like, he came to the hospital when I was in surgery. He came to the hospital to pick up the belt, man, you know, because I didn't bring the belt to the fight. I should never bring it even to the country because I was supposed to leave that at home, man. None of the champs bring their belts back, especially from out the country. You know what I mean? That's a nice belt, dude. Like, that's something that I keep for memorabilia. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the way I've always known it is you keep that belt, you fight. If you're fighting again for another belt, they present you with another belt.
And that's the thing. They had another belt sitting in their car. They had another belt sitting in the van, man. And they played me into bringing the belt out there so you could get that belt, you know, and take it from me so I don't have it. And that's the craziest thing about it, man. That's the only reason he came to the hospital and took a picture with me. And then after I did the video, you know, because I'm a respectful guy, you know what I mean? So I took the video with him. I gave him his props on video. And then it clicked in my head like, oh, you idiot. This guy just came here just to make himself look good on your in front of your fans, in front of, you know, the people watching. He just came up here to act like he's showing his respect. But really, he just came to get that belt for me that I had in my suitcase. You know, and like I said, BKB was not going to fly me home back to America unless I signed a 2-year contract. Not with Jimmy. I already signed the fight with Jimmy. But they wanted me signing 2 years or we're not flying you home. You got to pay for your own flight back home. And I'm like, you know, flight's like $1,500, man. And I'm in surgery, man. I can't be going through all this stuff. Like, I'm not trying to be booking flights and trying to look for all this stuff, man, to get home, man. And like I said, after about 4 or 5 days in the hospital, you know, I ended up getting the contract dropped to 1 year, and then, you know, we agreed upon, you know, it made sense for both of us, so I signed it, and they booked my flight right away. And you know, like I said, I screenshotted all the messages. It's on my Facebook page. It shows my contract with Jimmy, and it shows the date, and then it shows when he signed the other fight with Sean George in July 13th, and then I signed with Rogue Elite August 1st. So then, and then they flip the script and saying, I didn't take the fight. You know, so it is what it is. But deep down, they know. They know, you know what I mean?
See, you know, that's a thing that's been popping up lately that kind of bothers me. I don't mean to get off topic for a second, but you look at Vince Murdoch and a couple other fighters that have fought overseas for, you know, MTV and other aspects. And they kind of hold you guys captive once you get over there. It's like, if you don't do this,
right,
we're not flying you home. If you don't do this, we're not going to pay you. So I think in the aspect, managers need to formulate a contract for an overseas fight and have it differentiate from an American contract because, you know, once you're over there, you're screwed. I mean, they can do anything they want to you, and you're screwed, and you got to live with the repercussions of it. So I don't think you were done justly in that aspect. You know, I kind of want to jump to the Stephen Miller Memorial Show for Rogue 2. You're set to face Melvin Gillard, and I like to call him Cisco. But honestly, I think this is a fight, and you know me, bro, I speak my heart. I speak what I think, and I honestly think this is a fight above you. I think you're better than this fight. You know, what is Julian Lane, how do you look at it going into this fight? Because I think you're the better competitor here.
Well, this is a fight for the fans, you know what I mean? Melvin's got a big name. I got a large following myself. And it's for the fans, it's for the memorial, man. You know, the Melvin, you know, he's actually a friend of mine. He, you know, called me up. You know, we talked about the fight. You know, whether we're going to – we've talked about fighting, you know, each other before, you know. Melvin's always an idol of mine, man. I watched growing up. I liked watching Melvin fight, man. He was, you know, like when he was real scrappy, man, knocking guys out. I think he still holds, you know, the most knockouts in the lightweights at the UFC. And, you know, I was like, hell yeah, it'd be an honor to fight Melvin, man. BKB tried to get me to fight him back in January, but we didn't take that fight. So, you know, for the Rogue Elite – yeah, I think it's a better show for the Rogue Elite, man. Coventry, England, you know, they got a Rogue Elite well known there. BKB trash talks them a lot, but that's just because they're competitors, you know what I mean? And they feel a threat coming, you know, especially me and Melvin headlining the show. And it's basically a fight for the fans, man. You know, the fans want to see it, and that's what we're going to give them, man. And, you know, honored to do that. And it's going to be a good fight, you know what I mean? Whether it's I'm above it or not, you know, I'm going to showcase my skills and show everybody what I'm made of, and then Melvin's going to be there on the other end, you know what I mean? So it's something that's
yeah,
going to definitely.
You know what? I look back. I'm sorry, bro, but I look back to his fight with Rickles, you know, in Bellator, and it was like, you know, I don't know. I just, to me, I think it's going to be a tremendous aspect. For one, it's bare knuckle, but you know, I hope the real Melvin Gillard shows up that night, because Julian, you deserve nothing but an opponent that is truly game. I mean, you come every time,
sure,
100% on point, and that's one of the reasons why I respect you so much. You're not one of these little bullshit fighters that goes to the bar with his belt on his shoulder and then fights once a year or once every year and a half. You know, you're somebody that's willing to do it week after week after week. You know, in a lot of ways, that, like I said, that's what captivated me with your fighting style and who you are in life. And it, you kind of, in a certain aspect, you kind of remind me of Chuck Liddell with the attitude. You know, I just love what I'm doing.
Like, yeah, man.
Would you say that's a fair analogy for Julian Lane, that you just truly love what you're doing?
For sure. And to put Chuck's name in it, man, you know, that's my favorite fighter, man, Chuck Liddell. So, like, always, you know what I mean? That feels great. So just hearing that from you, man, you know what I mean? And, yeah, like I said, man, I'm always – that's my game. That's my life, man. This is the path I chose. I'm a full-time fighter. I'm a father, man, so when it's time to fight, man, whether, you know what I'm saying, if it's, whether you're comfortable with the opponent or not, man, you just train for it, man, you show up and you put your skills to the test, man, that's it, that's what it is, man.
Yeah. Well, you're doing two things in life, too, bro. You're showing yourself that you could be anything that you want to be, that you set your mind to, but you're also showing your child or children that once you set out to do something in life, you see it through. And,
right,
you know, that doesn't happen very often in today's society. And that's one thing that, you know, I've learned to gain more respect for you, because, you know, people laughed at me one time, man. I brought this guy on that was 0-6 in Bellator.
Right.
And he wanted to do a retirement show. And they laughed at me. Why are you? I said, you know what? I said, man, anybody that has the balls to step on a mat or a cage or a ring and to see things through, to show their kids that once you set something forward in life, you see it all the way through, whether you come out on top or you come out on bottom, at least you see it through. And that's one
right
thing that you're showing your children. So in that aspect, you're really defining who Julian Lane, not just the fighter, but the man is. And I like that aspect, because it adds
thank
a different
you
variance to you, and it fulfills a certain part of your chapter or your legacy in life moving forward, because you are showing other people, you know, in life also that you see things through. You know, what
for
does
sure
it mean,
man,
for Julian Lane to be able to share that type of message with the youth of America? Because you're doing it with young fighters too, because I hear a lot of young fighters talk about you and they say that, you know, they love your tenacity, they love your spunk, that you're willing to fight anybody, but you're willing to go 100. What does it mean for you to hear that type of aspect being said about you?
It means everything to me, man. You know, that's me, man. I feel like that's part of my, you know, it's part of my life, man. You know, it's God's plan. You know, I'm a messenger of God, you know. So me showing, I show people, sometimes I may be an example, you know what I mean? Hopefully a good example, though, you know, and then that's the thing. Like, a lot of people can learn from me, learn from my mistakes, you know, and I will sacrifice, you know, my life to show people that they can be, you know, to inspire people and to push others to become something in their life, man. And whether I make it all the way to the top or not, you know, my life's been a roller coaster, you know, up and down, but at the same time, you know, these last couple months of training has been really hard, man. I actually joined a team out here, you know, in Vegas at Fight Capital for this camp, and I've stepped my skills way up, man. My training's way up for this fight, so I'm definitely going to be the best I could be in this fight. And like I said, man, I just, you know, I'm here to inspire others, you know, guys that can relate to me, women and children that can relate to me, and, you know, keep stay motivated in their life, man, and not, you know, be down on themselves and, you know, just keep pushing, man. Like, it is what it is. Like, I'm 31 years old, but it took me, I've been fighting 10 years, man. Like, I started off 4-0, went on the Ultimate Fire, and then after that it was kind of like up and down, you know. But then it's like, hey, it's time to get serious, man. You're 31, probably got a few years of your prime left, man. So it's time to really get busy, man, and take it really serious, and not to be selfish, you know what I mean? Because all my fans believe in me, and my family believe in me, and all the hard work we've put in these years, you know, just finish what we started, man, and really dig deep these next few months and next couple of years, man, in the training, and just to really show the world and show, you know, and try to capture that world title, man, and get as many world titles as I can, man, whether or not it's, you know, like, I'm not, if I'm, you know, make a lot of money, that's what it is, man. But you got to learn to enjoy life every day, man, and not just chase your dreams, man, and say that, oh, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. That's how I am all the time. I'm hard on myself, so I'll lose and be hard on myself, or I'll be like, I didn't do good enough, this and that. But, man, you know, you just know who your real friends are. Know who the ones that love you, the ones that stick with you, man, and be loyal to them, you know, and that'll just show you, man, your life will be you'll live a happy life, man. Just, you know, just appreciate what you have in life, you know what I mean? And because you can't have it all, man, you know what I mean? But if it happens, it happens. But, you know, just enjoy life day by day, man, because life is quick, and you know, life is short. So just enjoy it, man. Enjoy the roller coaster ride, man, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you there, man. I'm 53, so I truly feel you, bro.
Sure,
you know,
man.
come September 29th, you know, I know you and Melvin are friends, but if you had to make a statement what people can expect for Rogue 2 out of Julian Lane, what would that statement be, brother?
Yeah, I'm coming for the knockout, man. You know, I always show up to fight. I never sell out for nobody, man. I'm going to show up. You step in that ring, we're gonna put our best in there, man. I'm gonna put my best, and I wanna see what I'm made of, man. You know, I'm fighting Melvin Gillard. You know, he's my boy, and you know, I'd rather fight him in the cage. But you know, if it's a bare knuckle that we gotta do, that's what we gotta do, man. You know, I know the fans are gonna love it, man. And like I said, I just wanna go in there and get that belt, man. And I wanna showcase my skills, and I wanna look like a professional. I want to look sharp. I want this, you know, this fight's going to really set me up the ladder. You know what I mean? Push me up the ladder, man. And get back on the right track, man. And from here out, you know, it's no more slacking off, man. No more like half-ass training, man. I got team behind me. You know what I mean? Back home in Mansfield, it's hard to get, you know, get busy because it's a lot of distractions, man. And I don't really have a loyal team behind me. So I have to travel 2,000 miles across the country, man, and leave my kids back home. But that's what I got to do, though, man, to, you know, make their lives great. That's what I got to do. So, you know, just sometimes you just got to sacrifice, you know what I mean? Sacrifice some time, and that we can, you know, sacrifice a couple of years, man, and you can live happily ever after in the long run, man.
Amen to that. See, and people really don't understand, like, you go all the way to a foreign country, most of the time you can't take your family with you because it costs so damn much and this and that. But then on top of that, once that cage door locks, you're truly walking in there alone. So to not have anybody there with you and then hear that cage door lock, you know, it's a feeling that most people can't even fathom, let alone handle. And you've been able to do it time and time again. You know, my man, I think your arm's going to get raised. I feel it. I can't wait for this day because I'm a true Julian Lane fan, and if you don't like it out there, hey, man, middle fingers up. That's all I can say.
Straight up, bro.
I'm sorry, man. You know, I just like people that scrap, people that love the sport and truly want to make a difference in the sport. Julian, you truly have done that, man. Thank you for honoring my show today. It's been an honor.
Thank you for having me.
Having
you
back.
Honor.
Yeah,
honor's mine,
man. We have
fun
every time,
mm-hmm.
man. But
for sure.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm going to hand the mic to you, man. Any sponsors, friends or family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, Julian? The floor is yours, brother.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, shout out to my team out here, Fight Capital Gym. If anybody's in Vegas, you want to get some good training, some Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, boxing, best boxing, you can get out here, man. It's out here on Valley View in Las Vegas, Nevada, Fight Capital Gym, man. Check it out. Shout out to my boy Dante Rivera. out in New Jersey. That's my professor, my jiu-jitsu professor. And, yeah, shout out to all my friends and family, my supporters. Shout out to my haters, too. You know what I mean? Everybody follow me on Twitter, Julian Lane MMA. Follow me on Instagram, Julian Lane MMA. Shout out to all my people back in Mansfield, man, all my family, my kids. You know, my mom, my biggest fan, you know what I mean? So without my mom, I could have never done nothing in life. So, yeah, much love to everybody. And thank God, man, mostly thank God, you know, for keeping me strong and giving me these tough battles to fight through in life, because that's who makes me the man I am.
And the champion you're going to be, man. Bring that belt home, brother.
For sure, man. I got it. You know I got it, man.
Yes, sir. God bless you, Julian. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Don. Thanks for having me on the show, man. Later.
Oh, it's an honor, bro. Later. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Julian Lane. We're running just a hair behind, but we're going to go ahead and do a commercial spot, and we'll be back in 56 seconds.
What up, it's your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of the Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
And we're back. Let's go ahead and give Hit'em Holloway a call.
Hello?
Hey, this is the Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire. How you doing?
Good, sir. Good, good, good. Is there any way I put you on hold for 1 second just to get my mom off the line?
Hey, no problem, brother. Go ahead.
All right.
Yeah, it's live radio, people. You just got to deal with it. At least we got Hit'em Holloway on here.
Hey, what's going on, sir?
Hey, what's going on, brother? You know, that's what I was just telling people. It's a wonderful thing about live radio. You never know what's going to happen. We just had Julian Lane on the show, and it's an honor to have Hit'em Holloway on my show, man. I've been wanting to have you on the show for a minute. How's things been cracking for you in the sports world, brother?
Man, you know how it goes, man. It's up and down, man. But, you know, on the downside, it's all up to you as a matter of, and, you know, how soon you come back up or how soon you start making that climb back towards, you know, your goals. You know, coming off of that last loss back in August, it was kind of tough for me, you know. Had some good things going into the camp, just came off of a big win versus Vic K, and then to go in and, you know, and it gets caught in the guillotine of all things, you know, kind of try to help me put things in perspective, take some time away from MMA and focus on my grappling, my jiu-jitsu, and other things to get my mind to break so I could actually give my all to it, because I kind of felt like I'd lost that passion. And I'd say back in April, I was in a car accident that really changed my life, because it could have altered my life, but since it didn't, it kind of made me think about what I was doing and the direction I was going in. And now I've been revamped, man. Hungrier than I was before when I started, so I would say it's been pretty good.
Yeah, I hear you there. You know, if I could correct you on one thing, I hope you don't mind, brother, but a good buddy of mine and UFC veteran, James Krause, did a Q&A one time, and my listeners are probably going, man, I've heard this shit 1,000 times. But, you know, somebody asked him, what's it like to be 22-7? And he said, I'm not 22-7, I'm 22-0 with 7 lessons learned. You know, that's one thing I don't like about certain aspects of the sport is the record aspect of it. Because to me, anytime somebody steps up in the cage and that cage door is locked, it's anybody's fight. I don't care if you're 21-2 facing a guy that's 3-10. You know, you never know what's going to happen. So, you know, always look at it as a lesson, because we learn from it. You know, you always take that. Yeah, well, warriors take that extra step in life anyway, brother, because you get the average people that do the 9-to-5, they come home, they put the car in the garage, they shut their blinds, they shut the world off, and then there's people like you that take to the mat, the cage, or the ring, and those people deserve a voice. And that's one of the reasons why I had you on the show today. You know, I look at your career, and it's been tremendous. What initially brought you into the sport or even led you down the that path of athletics as a young, early, as an aspect of your life?
Well, you know, my uncle was a professional boxer, and coming from a small town, I came from an athletic family. Everybody played sports. Everybody expected me to follow my father's footsteps, you know, with football, but I was a great team player, but I was one of those people that I had high expectations for the people around me. I expected them to do the same things I was doing, and, you know, and it made me a little bitter that, you know, they weren't putting forth the same effort or taking advantage of the opportunities to get in that extra work or training. But at the end of the day, it's totally up to them, you know, so they choose to be. And I've always had a love for boxing since I was 4 years old. I knew this is what I wanted to do as far as combatives. It started with me, you know, leading down that trouble path, you know, typical story. And I was actually in a situation where if I didn't change my life, I was either going to be dead or in jail. I mean, that was just the facts. And martial arts, MMA saved my life. I mean, since the day I got out of prison, I've never, in 2012, October 11th, I've never had anything as far as a minor traffic infraction. You know, my last 6 years have been spent in a gym or around this sport. That's why I kind of really think I needed that break in between to kind of line things up. But, yeah, man, I'm truly thankful for this sport. But there's no telling where I would be.
Yeah, you know, I feel you there because you look at, I mean, people, I don't know, society's cruel, and they want to ridicule people. But you know what? I always feel the past is the past, and what's in the past is irrelevant because it doesn't really articulate or correlate who the person is today. You know, the first time I had Julian Lane on my show, he was surprised that I didn't bring up the incident at Ultimate Fighter Redemption between him and Tim Elliott and James Krause. And, you know, I told him, I said, man, that's the past. You know, people grow up. People see things differently. So why should I have brought up a story that everybody already knows but nobody wants to hear anymore? And that's the way I feel about life. You look at Juan Archuleta, you know, he had to go to prison for a year. But yet he came back out, he made a difference in his life, and now he's sitting at 20-0, you know, and also undefeated in Bellator. Anybody can make a change in their life if they want to. You know, what was it that inspired you after those changes when you sat back and you had that time to reflect? What was it that reinvigorated you to make you want to step back up in the cage, brother?
The reason why I started doing it to begin with, you know, I wanted to show to my daughter that she could do anything that she chose to put her mind to. Like, whatever she dreams, she could have her dreams. That it's possible that you don't always have to, you know, necessarily go in that path that your parents, you know, everybody's directing you what you should do, you know, go to school, go to college, get a job, you know, especially where I'm from in a small town, everybody ends up usually working at one of these fucking plants or factories. And there's no problem with that. But I just couldn't see myself settling, you know, at that point in my life, just at any point in my life, for anything without going for something. And, you know, dealing with the whole bullshit custody and visitations and all that, I actually had something I was really fighting for. As a matter of fact, that was the reason I was taking all those fights back to back. I fought 7 times in 8 months. I fought 4 times in 2 months. And every bit of those purses went to fucking custody hearing, you know, $600 retainers here and there. And nothing was, you know, eventually accomplished. But like I said, this last year, my accident, I don't know what hit, but I think that window, when it hit me, it kind of knocked something back on track.
The fear of God, bro. You know, the fear of God. Well, I'll be honest with you, and my listeners are probably going to go, damn, here we go. But, you know, I've had 232 surgeries in life. You know, I was diagnosed with diabetic late in life, and by the time I found out, I had gangrene and osteomyelitis on my foot, and, you know, things just got worse from there. I ended up with a feeding tube and all kinds of things. So I understand where you're talking about, you know, you got to see things through. You know, I gave up on life, and I was giving up on a lot of things. And, you know, to hear you say that you want to show your child that whenever you set your mind to it, because me and Julian Lane were just talking about this. We were just talking about not only are you creating a foundry and a chapter of your life and a legacy for your family, but you're also showing your child that when you start something, you see it through to completion. And, you know, that's two guests in a row that have just truly amazed me, because I'm sitting at 53 years old, and I'll be quite honest with you, society has me baffled anymore. You know, I used to preach about the good old days on my show, but you young man will never know about the good old days because they will never be again. So to hear you talk in the inspiring manner that you do is it's humbling, because, you know, I interviewed 622 or 624 fighters last year, and very few fighters have the mentality that you do. And I think it's tremendous that you want to set a precedence for your child to, you know, show them that you can see things through. And,
well, not only for my child, for all kids, man, because, I mean, you look at the society now, it's this younger generation coming up, and everything's quick, everything's fast, nothing's earned. So when it's earned, it's easy come, easy go. Nothing really has value anymore, you know, and I've learned my values all my life through hard work. You know, I started working at the age of 8. So my work ethic has always stuck with me in that aspect.
Yeah. Well, you look at everybody that you fought, and you really have fought no slouches. You fought tremendous opponents. And, you know, even though your last one was a lesson learned, I kind of want to go back to the Vitkay fight. I mean, that was a tremendous aspect in your life. I mean, because to me, I think you defined yourself or found out in yourself that records don't matter. And I think you proved that going into that fight. Would you say that's a fair analogy?
Yeah, I mean, because they've been trying to make that fight happen for 2 years. A lot of people didn't like the fact that I took the fight when I did take it, because they were like, oh, he's just going to wrestle you. And I was just like, yeah, but he's got to grab me first. And I have to just stand there and let him grab me. I love Dave Vitkay to death, man. He's a great guy, man. He's a great athlete. But I've been watching that guy. I've been watching film on him for the last 2 or 3 years. Like I said, I knew that fight was going to happen, and everything played out, you know, to the T as far as me strategizing for that fight.
Yeah. Well, man, I think it's time for you to step back up in Bellator or something. You know, I know you can't talk about anything if there is something on the plate, but is there something that the fans can expect?
I don't know. There's nothing on the plate, but I can tell right now. I'm gonna fight Junior Santao on November the 10th. I just signed my contract about a week ago, so I'm gonna fight a UFC veteran, Junior Santao, for 864 championships. Now the plan was for me to try and get on this Bellator card. I think they have one coming up in October, but I have a feeling with me being at 155 and being able to make that weight consistently and actually calling people out, I think it's more of a politics thing, because you're looking for opponents, you're looking for guys, and as soon as I throw my name in the hat, like I have AIDS or some shit. Pretty much, like I got cooties or something, man, because they want no parts of that, and it's cool, but I just hate these posts, you know. Even I'm not here trying to call out guys on the local regions or anything, because they like to make excuses, you know. You're the best, but here I come. Oh, well, I'm going to the UFC anyway, and all of a sudden now you don't want to fight. And the promoters are still going after these guys, and they're only going after them because, you know, that's who sells the tickets, you know, they're in the area. I understand, but don't put these guys up like they're the best, because I'll smash them all. I posted, I think, maybe 60 guys from all the southeast states, from Tennessee down to Florida, the top 10 55ers. I know 2 or 3 of them personally in the number one spot. And everybody's going down. They're trying to go down to 45 or they're ducking. You know, and there's nothing personal against anybody. I'm just here to prove I'm the best. For somebody that fought as much as I fought in my region, I've never been ranked. That's the crazy part. I've never been ranked. So I'm trying to figure out how the fuck that happened to begin with. But I'm not salty about it. Let me prove myself. Because I don't believe you. I don't believe you're the number one. I don't believe in the number two. I don't believe in the number three. I don't believe any of these fuckers.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. I get it, man. I knew I was right when asking you on the show because, you know, I picked the fighters to come on my show from my heart. You know, a lot of people, you know, struggle to get fighters, and I'm not having that problem. As you've seen yesterday, I had Chuck Liddell on a live feed. He'll be coming back on Thursday. You know, this sport, it's a vicious cycle, man. A lot of people really don't understand it. You know, they see what they see on TV. They see what they see on social media, but they don't really know what this sport truly is. And I don't think I really understood it until I started, you know, interviewing some of the greatest fighters of all time from the early days of the UFC, from the conception of the UFC. And to hear some of the stories that they've gone through and some of the adversities that they've had to overcome, what does the sport truly mean to you, as not just as a warrior, but as a man? Because, you know, you've already defined that you're teaching your daughter the proper aspects of life, but what are you taking away from it as a man moving forward?
Man, as a man moving forward, for me, this sport allows me to prove just that. I mean, if you think about the most primitive things, I mean, at the end of the day, we have combat. If you think back to medieval times, I feel like I'm living another life, and in my past life, this is what I was doing. And I feel like I'm just doing the shit that I was meant to be doing. I don't know why it's in me. When I'd sit and talk to my grandfather, I'd think I was fucking crazy. I'd sit around and say, like, from the age of 17 to about 22, when I was really, like, studying boxing, I probably daydreamed about 50 different counters off of somebody just threw a jab or just, you know, just odd shit, man. Just that's all I'm thinking. My mind just revolved around that shit like clockwork. And for me, it's that sense of I can handle myself in any situation because it's controlled in that cage. Now, when it comes to the real world and actual life aspects, I know out here it's life or death. And I feel like if I can handle myself from there and win, lose, or draw, I know I didn't give up. And, of course, there's other things that are not legal in an MMA aspect. But to me, I feel like I'm just keeping myself sharp, honestly, and proving I'm the best in the world as far as me competing.
Yeah, and I think you are. You know, I looked at a bunch of your footage, and, man, it's just like now that I get to interview you, I'm even more enthralled in who you are and what you're going to bring. You know, it's tremendous fighters like you, you know, that make this sport. I'm just going to be honest. You know, like a lot of people ask me, why do you like Julian Lane? I like Julian Lane because he says what he's got to say. He don't pull the punches, you know, but he's real about it. And you know, when he's wrong, he admits he's wrong. But, you know, I get a lot of naysayers all the time because I bring him on the show. But, you know, I look at the sport as, you know, I'm going to represent who I think is going to move forward in the sport. When I look back at your footage, I look at all your fights, and now speaking with you, you're a tremendous attribute to the sport, so I want to commend you in that aspect.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, man. You know, I come from a jacked-up life, too, man. I come from the projects, you know, and I lived my whole life in military school without family, and I was always told that I would never amount to anything. And I sit back and I laugh about it now because I'm a two-time inducted Hall of Fame fight photographer. I just got talk show of the year for my radio show. I've been doing radio shows for 14 years now. But on top of that, I got my master's in engineering science, and I still smack myself going, why am I shooting fights? But, you know, we find those things that we love in life. We find that aspect of us that we feel will truly define the path that we need to walk. You know, you talk about your family being in the sport. You talk about people saying, you know, why didn't you follow in your father's, you know, footsteps? What was it that made you take that different path away from where your family had been?
I wanted my own legacy. I wanted something that was just mine. You know, no one else could put their name on it or my shadow. I couldn't be casted in the shadow. It had nothing to do with that. It was just, I've always been really competitive by nature. I mean, I don't know what it is. I would naturally compete, not even trying to, no matter what I was doing. It could be at work, even at something simple as a home with a sibling,
PE at school, like I'm always competing. I'm always looking at the person next to me, and if they're working harder than me, or if I feel like they're working harder than me, then I've got to turn it up. I've got to work harder. I've got to push it. You know, so it's for me, it's just, you know, I had to be in an aspect to where I was pushing to have my own, you know. And that's pretty much it. Nobody in my family wants to come anywhere near this shit. Yeah, I think I'm fucking crazy.
But I think it's cool, man, because, you know, it just shows who you are. Your family already defined their legacies in their own aspect, and all you're doing is rewriting a new chapter in the book of your family, but in your own attribute, and that's to be, you know, defined through you, and I commend you on that. You know, I look at this sport, and like we kind of talked about earlier, it's a brutal sport. You got to have really thick skin to be in it. You know, what is your greatest takeaway from being a part? I know we talked about earlier, you know, showing your family and other people and all the kids that, you know, once you set forth to do something, you see it through. But what is it that allows you to continue in this sport? Because it's brutal, and people are three-faced, and you got to deal with a lot of bull crap, like Julian Lane was saying on his last fight. They had him stuck in England when he was in the hospital with a broken jaw, and they told me that he signed a two-year fight contract, or we're not flying you home. What is it that allows you to thrive and still exist in this sport, being that it is the way it is and you're so humble?
My thing is I just know that I haven't given it my full potential, and everybody, I'm going to be fucking candid right now. So, nobody knows this, but I probably really trained for maybe three of those fights. And the rest of them, man, was off of, you know, just talent or being smart and really strategizing. Because, dude, I was smoking cigarettes and drinking and fucking and shit, you know. But I was just fighting because that's what I love to do. Hell, I've been in maybe 200 plus street fights since between the age of 15 to fucking 19. And thank God I got away from here. But yeah, man. Now that, and it's crazy because for me to get all that slack and all that bullshit from guys, I kind of laugh at it because at the end of the day, I knew the truth. You know, you can lie to yourself all you want. You can lie to everyone else. And they can be fooled, you know. But I always knew that I never gave it my all. And that's just me keeping it 100. I've never really given the sport my all. And I was ashamed. I'm not going to lie. I was kind of ashamed of myself because I know I'm better than this. And so now it's like once everything was put in place for me, like I said, that accident, man, did some shit to me. And it's been incredible, man. My mindset is totally different. Very disciplined. The diet has been phenomenal. And it's just, there's no kill or be killed mindset. It's kill. Everything is kill. We're killing. I'm killing everything. You know, now you just have to put it in front of me. And I have a feeling that they feel it. Somebody feels it. And it's just a matter of time before I get the opportunity to prove myself. But
I
sure as hell can't wait.
If you did that... Not even being on point, I can't wait to see the rebirth of Hitam Holloway, bro. I'll just be quite honest with you, because if you didn't do that, you did all that and you weren't even on point. Oh, my God. You know, the sport world better.
That's just me being honest.
Because
look at me now. I train the way I'm supposed to train. I walk around between 167 and, you know, 172. As before, you know, I just, off of genetics, I can eat whatever the fuck I want to eat. Train mediocrely, whatever the fuck that word is. I would just train half-assed, pretty much, and I may be cutting anywhere between 7 to 15 pounds, depending on how bad I ate that week, you know. I was, basically, I had a cheat sheet, and that shit caught up with me, though. As soon as I got to the main stage, it was like, nah. It's almost like God stopped me in my tracks. It was like, I'm going to hold your horses right here, because I don't think you're ready for that, and it was just, ran into Matt Secor. Trained maybe 3 weeks for him. I mean, I was on the mats, but mentally I wasn't there. My mind was everywhere else, who I was going to fuck afterwards, how much weed I was going to smoke, all that shit, or going to light up a cigarette as soon as I got off the fucking mat. So, and then Michael Page, hell, I was having money issues. And that was kind of on time, and on top of that, I wanted to fight that dude for so long, and when I felt like I was ready, a year prior to us fighting, he had turned me down. I think around that time, that's when he was like 6-0. And then Jacob McClintock, I don't know what the hell I was thinking. I really give it to that guy because I slept on him. I looked at him and was like, who is this opie-looking motherfucker? And next thing I know, he's the motherfucker that's tapping me, that's choking me with this fucking guillotine. That's who he was. But
Kind of made you wake up, man. You know,
oh, God,
you
yeah.
About, you had the wreck. Now it's the rebirth. You know, you rechanneled the positivity and different aspects of life, and you're removing the negativity. Now you truly have found yourself, and you're proving for your family, and you're rewriting that chapter in your book. And that's to be commended, man. I mean, it truly is, my brother. You know, a lot of people can't see that aspect in their life and pick themselves up, but you truly have. You know, if you had to make a statement to the people that are going to see your next fight about what Hitam Holloway is going to show up and what they can expect, what would that statement be, my brother?
Man, a beautiful display of violence.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard that on my show, and I've been doing it 14 years. I love that, a beautiful display of violence. That's tremendous. You know, I love that, man. You know, I love the aspect that you found yourself in life. I love the aspect that you now know where you need to be. And, you know, I knew there was a reason why I wanted you on the show, and I'm truly honored that you joined the show today, brother. You know,
and it was an honor to be here, man.
We'll get you on. I'll tell you what, man. Bet we'll get you on right before your fight, and we'll have you on again for a little bit longer of a segment because I think there's much more of a story of you to tell than we were able to do in the 30 minutes today. And I would love to have you back on right before your fight and share you again with the world. You know, I truly love your attitude, young man. You know, I hate to say that, but the car wreck seems like it kind of puts some common sense into you, and I think the world is going to be shocked about the next outing of Hitam Holloway, and I think they're going to look back and reflect, and you're going to find your place on this road that we love so much in this sport. Right now, my brother, I'm going to hand you the microphone. If you have any friends or family, any social media sites, any sponsors, or anything else you'd just like to add to the program, the floor is yours, brother.
All right. All right, guys, let me give a shout-out to Coach Dave Saun, who did a tremendous job this past weekend. He had a couple guys on that Dallas card for UFC. Shout-out to Jeff Neal. He got robbed on that performance of the night because that head kick was sick. Hope Camacho gets well soon. Charles Bird, he had a great performance. He got caught, but please, he's coming back strong. Also, Razak Thunder Judo, great performance. All the guys at Fortis MMA, man, shout-out to those guys over at R&R Boxing. Coach Tony Mack at T-Mac Elite Training. If you guys are ever in the Dallas area, be sure to come check us out. We're located at the Den in Allen off of Greenville. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and IG under Hitam Holloway. That is Hitam, H-I-T-E-M, Holloway. You know, I'd like to thank God for everything because, hell, without him, I don't know where I'd be as well as this sport. Thank you guys for having me, man. That's pretty much it. It's a wrap. You guys be sure to stay tuned. November 10th, I will be fighting for 864 Championships. This is a pay-per-view event versus UFC veteran Junior Santa. And hopefully, I don't hope to retire him, but I think I might make his ass sit down and start coaching.
I love it, brother. I wish you the best of luck. Like I said, we'll get you on right before you fight again, as there's too many layers to you to share in 30 minutes, and next time I'll give you a 45-minute slot, and we'll sit down and we'll shoot the crap again. Until then, thank you so much for joining the show, brother.
All right, anytime, sir.
You are a remarkable young man. God bless you.
Thank you, sir. God bless you, too. Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jeremy Hitam Holloway, man. You got to love it, man, when a guy is – truly transparent like that. But we're gonna jump to the para aspect of the show, man. We got a tremendous young man coming on. With that being said, I'm gonna go ahead and add Tyler Bray and Ronald Mann to the program. If we can get this computer to work right. Gentlemen, are you there?
Yes. Hi, how you doing?
Yes.
Hi.
Don, I'm on here as well, brother.
Oh, man, the shaved gorilla. You're welcome, Tyler. You know,
Tyler, it's nice to meet you. Nice to talk to you, my friend.
Yeah, good to meet you.
You know, I got to admit, you know, reading your bio, Tyler, it brought a tear to my eye. It kind of made me kind of look at myself and realize that, you know, because I'm an amputee, so we'll get that out there first and foremost. But it made me realize that I thought I was overlooking obstacles. I thought I was overlooking the things that I thought hindered me. But then when I read your bio, I saw a beautiful natured man that really looked at life in a totally positive spectrum. I mean, totally different spectrum than I ever looked at life. What allowed you to find that unique quality in your heart to share and love life the way you do, brother?
I guess I've always wanted to find out what I'm capable of. I never wanted to assume, you know? I feel like that happens a lot, especially like in the disabled community. We will believe what the world believes about us, you know, and we'll assume that we can't do this or we can't do that. And, yeah, there's a lot of things we can't do, but I'd rather find out, and I'm okay with failing, you know, and I'm okay with failing multiple times. I really want to find out, can I do this or can I not? I don't want to live my life wondering, you know?
Yeah, I like that aspect. There's one thing I'm going to change, and I hope you don't get offended by this, you know. Ron, I can't remember who it was I did this to, but I think it was, I can't remember his name. You'll remember it in a second. But I don't like the terminology handicap, because the way I look at it is we're not handicapped, man. we're handicapable.
Yeah.
You know, we could do anything that we set our mind to, and reading your bio and looking at your accreditations, you truly have done that in life. You know, from the early days of elementary school and early life, you've persevered. You know, who was the main intent in your life, or was it just you that allowed you to look at life, like I said earlier, in a different spectrum, but not only that, but allow you to persevere through the obstacles that you had to go through?
I don't think it was just one person. I think it was a lot of people that were all chained together throughout my life. I met a lot of people in my life at the right time, at the right place. My parents were always very open to me trying things. They weren't, you know, here and there they'd be concerned about my safety, but they never said, no, don't do that, or we're not going to allow you to do that. You know, we would always give it a try. So it started with them. It started with, you know, watching my older brother working out when I was like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, and I would see him lifting weights and everything, and I'm like, okay, I want to do that. And, you know, so I had examples there. And then once I tried wrestling in middle school, then I entered into this culture of wrestling that is very tough-minded, very ambitious. And then I was just led to one coach after another through the programs I joined and through wrestling camps I went to, where they just kept preaching that, like, don't be afraid to fail, dream big, you know, and just don't believe in limits, you know, go find out. And, you know, I ran into one mentor after another. Some of my biggest ones was like my high school wrestling coaches, Bruce Pearson and Grant DePue. They didn't take it easy on me whatsoever. They expected just as much out of me as anybody else on the team. I was the only person in a wheelchair on the team. But, you know, so they still held the same degree of, you know, demand on me. But they gave me those speeches every day about, you know, like, expect the best out of yourself, demand the best out of yourself, you know, and don't be afraid to fail. And, you know, and then it just led to one thing after another after that. You know, so I think I was just, I've been in a culture of positive thinking and mental strength for, you know, pretty much my whole life.
I think that's beautiful, my friend. That's a tremendous attribute to have in your life. Ronald?
Yeah, Tyler, the same as Don. When I read your biography that you sent us and brief moments that we've been able to talk together, it's just unbelievable your perseverance and your forward thinking. Like from basically from day one until right now and in this next coming week, it doesn't sound like you've ever slowed down or taken time off. Would you say that's pretty accurate that you know, through your entire life have just continued to go forward?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't like to stop. I mean, I'm forcing myself to take a week off after the Olympics. My body is yelling at me right now, but I don't like taking time off, you know. I wake up motivated and I want to go like let it out somehow, you know. And I feel like with all those years of being in that positive culture I grew up with wrestling and jiu-jitsu and being around all these ambitious people, I have that voice in the back of my head of like, don't waste the day. You know, even if it's a rest day, find some way to get closer to your goals today. You know, go study some jiu-jitsu video, learn a new technique or something, but don't waste time, you know?
Right. Yes, that's amazing, man, that you're able to continue this year after year. Now, I definitely can see why you're a personal trainer as well as a professional athlete.
Yeah, and I love helping people with the same mentality.
Yeah. I mean, the energy that you're bringing to this show right now is, you know, I've got jiu-jitsu activists, and I'm ready to be stomping at the bit right already. Let's go right back to the beginning, if you don't mind, just real quick. Usually we talk about each athlete and kind of their upbringing. Could you tell our listeners out there what exactly is your mobility limitations and how you grew up with that? Because you were born with it. Compared to somebody who has a traumatic accident as they grow older, how that kind of affected your thinking?
Yeah, it's interesting to compare and contrast those two. So I was born with spina bifida. To give you an idea of my mobility, I'm fully functional from the waist up. I'm semi-functional, like lower body. I have the ability to push, so like in the gym, I could do like a leg press. My quads are active. Or when I'm on the mat doing wrestling jiu-jitsu, I can drive into you using my quads, but I don't really have any hamstring strength, any adductors or abductors, any glute strength. I don't have much lower back strength. So it's, you know, kind of 50-50 below my waist. And then, yeah, when you kind of compare and contrast someone who's born like this versus someone who's in a major accident, it's completely different. Someone who lived 25 years totally normal and then they get into a car accident or something, that's a huge change in their life, and who knows what their upbringing was, if they had those role models to teach them how to overcome adversity, or if they're one of those people that's kind of been sheltered their whole lives and they have no idea how to overcome adversity, then that could be, you know, that could completely ruin them, you know. But versus when you're born like this, I don't know any other way, you know. So this is just how I always, you know, I've always been this way, so I've always tried to figure out how to modify anything.
It's tremendous, you know, it truly is. You know, I look at your physique, and I got to admit, I was taken back by the physique that you ascertained, you know, and now to hear you, you know, speak about some of your limits, it makes me appreciate your physique that much more, because you truly have to put that much added effort into creating the physique that you have today. How hard would you say it is comparative for you to the generalized person to get your physique and maintain it at the level it is now?
I would say, like, for being in a wheelchair, there's definitely a lot more creativity when it comes to your workouts, you know, because there's just some things that are hard to work with. You know, it's not as easy for me to do heavy dumbbell exercises, because maybe a normal person can grab like real heavy dumbbells and they can kind of use their legs to kind of thrust it up into a position to do a shoulder press or something like that. Well, I don't have the power in my lower body to help throw around those weights or, you know, different things like that. So it is a challenge sometimes to figure out how to get certain exercises set up and hit the right angles that you're trying to hit and develop those muscles that are underdeveloped. But, you know, that's where you just got to sit down and think about it for a minute and really get creative. Look at all the other wheelchair bodybuilders that I'm competing with this weekend. What are they doing, and get advice from them, and, you know, just kind of share your ideas, you know?
Yeah, that's tremendous. Yeah, because you were just recently notified that you're going to be you actually were one of the few invited to compete in the 2018 IFBB Olympia. You know, getting that type of call and being through the adversity that you have in life, what does those type of phone calls truly mean to you, not just as a man, but as a competitor?
I mean, I couldn't believe it. You know, when I got that call, I just had to sit there for a minute and realize what just happened. You know, it wasn't real. You know, this is the pinnacle, and this is the first year that the wheelchair division has ever been accepted into the Olympia. So, I mean, this is history making, and I'm getting to join the pioneers of our sport at this first ever wheelchair Olympia at the regular Olympia weekend next weekend, or this coming weekend. So it's a lot to take in, and honestly, I'm still kind of amazed by it. I'm following all these guys on Instagram and seeing all the promotion for the Olympia coming up, and I'm thinking, wow, like, I'm going to be on that same stage. I'm competing with these guys, and, you know, so it's still – I'm still kind of realizing all this, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like a dream come true. You know,
exactly.
I'm not going to take it easy on you on today's show, so I hope you know that.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
I'm a big meanie. No, well, I mean, I've done bodybuilding shows before. I've had Tate on. I've had Tobias Young. I've had Akane Negro. I've had a slew of bodybuilders on my show. But the thing that I'm going to ask you, and I'm not looking at you as somebody that's in a wheelchair. I'm looking at you as an individual who's a competitor that has truly gained my complete and utter, I'm just enthralled by what you've done and what your physique looks like. Will you ever be satisfied with your physique?
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, are you satisfied with your physique where it's at now, or will there ever become a point in time that you are satisfied? You know, I interviewed Tate and Tobias Young, and I asked them, and, you know, Tate said that he would never be satisfied with where he got his body. How does that reflect in the life of you, Tyler, looking at your physique? Will you ever be satisfied?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the thing that all real successful athletes have, is they have that never satisfied mentality, but there's a healthy and an unhealthy way of going about that. You know what I mean? And I do have that never satisfied mentality. I can always be better. I can always do better. And there's always somebody that can beat me, so I want to beat them. But I'm not going to, like, attach my self-esteem to that. You know, I'm not going to attach my self-esteem to, you know, since I'm not satisfied with my results yet, that means I'm depressed or, you know, whatever. My self-esteem is not attached to it. But at the same time, yes, I'm always going to try to push it harder. I'm always going to try to get to the next level because, you know, when I'm old and I'm on my deathbed, I want to look back and see that I maximized myself. I did everything that I could do. I didn't listen to what the world thought that I was capable of. I didn't listen to, you know, what my own mind thought I was capable of. I got those demons in the back of my mind like everybody else, but, hey, you know, can you really do that? Well, I want to find out, you know? So, like, that's my main thing I always think about is when I'm on my deathbed, when I'm older and I just can't move and, like, all this sports and everything is done, I want to know that I maximized myself. I went as far as I could go. I accomplished everything that I possibly could. I made my physique and my jiu-jitsu and my wrestling, my powerlifting, I made it all, you know, the best that it could possibly be.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of crazy because, you know, I say I'm not gonna treat you as an individual in a wheelchair because I don't think I should. And then we talked about the complexity of being satisfied with your physique. You know, I know it takes long, daunting hours in the gym to get where you're at. It's, you know, for most of my listeners that are listening and have never, you know, had a bodybuilder on the show before, somebody that's in the physique aspect, you'll never understand how much time and complexity it takes to create and continue and, you know, maintain this aspect. You know, would you say that, you know, because you are a personal trainer, would you say that with that complexity, and I hate asking these kind of questions, but it's just for my own personal knowledge, would you say that because you are never going to be satisfied, that it takes a certain aspect away from you socially?
Okay, do you mean like sacrificing time with friends, or what do you mean?
Yeah, with friends and family and life.
Oh, yeah.
How does one maintain
anything,
that aspect?
Know? I think that that's, you know, becoming high level at any sport, there's going to be that degree of, you know, you're doing a lot of things that you don't want to do. You have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, it's not a matter of, you know, what do I feel like doing today? It's a matter of what needs to be done today. You know, like rent is due today. What do you owe yourself today? You owe yourself a certain, you know, your workout, your diet, you need to stick to things. And if that means skipping, you know, going out to the movies with your friends, so be it. You know what I mean? Like your friends, your girlfriend, whatever, they're always going to be there. How many years can you go to the Olympia and really, you know, give it a shot? How many days can you go to the World Championships in Jiu-Jitsu and really give it a shot? You know, use these years in your 20s, 30s, maybe 40s to really do all you can, because, you know, it's a limited amount of time. So there's definitely a lot of sacrifice, but you got to have, like, that perspective on it.
I love you, bro. Hey, Ronald, I don't know where you found this guy, but I am just completely enthralled. I'm sorry, Tyler, but I interview a lot of fighters. Heck, I even interviewed Chuck Liddell yesterday. But I got to tell you, it's people like you that make me realize why I do what I do. So I truly commend you on your attitude. You truly are a tremendous athlete and an attribute to life. You know, Ronald, I'm going to toss the mic to you because I know you're chomping at the bit over there. But, man, thank you so much for bringing him on the show.
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate. We interviewed Cole Rogers a little while ago, and he passed Tyler on to me, and Tyler was kind enough to accept. Don, I have to say thank you for digging in like that. You're talking about high-level athletes and what they have to sacrifice, and everybody sees the blood and the sweat and the eating. You know, they see the time in the gym, but they don't really realize how much they sacrifice their personal self. You know, you're not out running around with your friends all the time. You're not doing all the things that quote-unquote normal people do. And so you see somebody like Tyler here who can do sport after sport after sport at a high level. That's a true dedication. So, Tyler, let's step into your wrestling. So you said in middle school is when you started wrestling. What brought you into that?
That was a combination of really actually just watching WWF on TV. I was watching a whole lot of WWF on TV, and then my best friend would come over, and we'd jump off the couches onto each other and wrestle around in the living room. And then my stepdad, he used to wrestle, so they used to, you know, watch us go at it in the living room all day long. And then my stepdad said, "Hey, why don't you give it a try? You know, try out wrestling in middle school."
That is an awesome answer. I don't think I've ever heard somebody say that. You know, usually it's somebody gets put in it because that's the culture of wrestling, but you were watching WWF, and that's what brought you into this wonderful sport. It's amazing, man. So you went from wrestling, and then you've gone over to powerlifting and then to bodybuilding.
Yes.
So kind of explain that journey. And I'm really interested because I don't know much about the lifting aspect of, you know, I see the strongman competitions and I see what you're doing now, but how does that transition from going from powerlifting into bodybuilding? It seems like two different complete sports right there.
Yeah, everything just kind of was connected throughout my whole life. I mean, I started in wrestling. I wrestled from seventh grade until my first year of college. And then during that time, during the summer of my junior year, I was looking for something to do in the off season because I'm just trying to be ambitious and don't have any downtime, you know, where I'm not, you know, progressing myself. So my little brother was doing Taekwondo at this place down the street from me. So I went in there and I asked the owner, "Hey, is there something I can do in here that mimics wrestling that, you know, would be good for me to do in the off season?" And he recommended jiu-jitsu. So then I started doing jiu-jitsu, and I fell in love with that because it's so similar to wrestling. So that's how I got started in jiu-jitsu. So then I was doing wrestling and jiu-jitsu for a handful of years. I still do jiu-jitsu today. And then from there, I heard about this guy through social media. His name was Rohan Murphy. He is missing his legs. He wrestled in high school, and then he went on to wrestle in college, I believe. And then he went on to Paralympic powerlifting. So then I thought, okay, what's this Paralympic powerlifting stuff? So I started looking into that, and it's just bench press. It's not the Olympic lifting, obviously, that we see in the regular Olympics. It's in the Paralympics, and it's just bench pressing. So then that got me really intrigued. I started doing that. And then through that, that took me all over the country, and I got to go international on a couple trips. That was really fun. And then let's see. So I did that for about 5 years. And then I quit doing that. I continued doing jiu-jitsu. And then what happened there? After that, so the next couple of years, I was just fascinated with the science behind, you know, getting bigger, faster, stronger. And I was going through school to become a personal trainer for my career because, like, I love all this stuff. So I was just learning more about it and building up myself, learning all these things that I'm learning in the classroom. I'm putting it, you know, on myself and with my clients. And one day I posted on my social media one of my progress pictures, and the founder of Wheelchair Bodybuilding, Nick Scott, he reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we have a bodybuilding show coming up. You should give it a try. And then that led to me doing my first bodybuilding show in Florida in 2015. There I took first place in my weight class, but second place in the overall. Then about 3 years later, which is now, which is this last March, I came back and did another bodybuilding show, and this time I won. So this last March is when I won my pro card. And that's pretty much where we're at now.
That is amazing, amazing path you've taken, brother. So with the, you know, you're focused primarily on bodybuilding now, correct?
Yeah, bodybuilding and jiu-jitsu.
In your bio, you talked about, I think you said you lift 5 days a week, and then you have jiu-jitsu as well 2 days a week?
Yes.
Okay. And so the jiu-jitsu, do you do that on your off days from bodybuilding and lifting, or do you combine those together?
Occasionally I'll lift on the same day that I do jiu-jitsu, but not often because my body will just fall apart on me if I do it too much. So only occasionally.
Yes, yes. They're both tough sports on the joints. So when you're looking at overall, like, I mean, you're going to the highest pinnacle in bodybuilding now. So obviously jiu-jitsu has to take a secondary role to that. How does how do they help each other? Like, how would you continue to supplement jiu-jitsu and focus that into what you're doing with bodybuilding?
I use jiu-jitsu as my cardio because, I mean, with me, I hate any kind of, you know, traditional cardio. I'll do it if I have to, but I hate getting on a rower and being on that thing for 45 minutes because I'm bored. And, you know, it drives me crazy. I'd rather do jiu-jitsu. I'd rather do something that has my mind very mentally engaged. I'm burning the same amount of calories or more. I'm getting just as much of a cardio burn. So what's the difference? As long as I don't get hurt, you know, as long as I'm careful and I'm rolling with good training partners who are not going to hurt me, you know, I'd much rather do that. So I've used jiu-jitsu as my cardio for all my bodybuilding shows.
Yes, it's fantastic. I agree with you, man. Like, for me, jiu-jitsu, everybody asks, you know, what do you do for your additional cardio? And just jiu-jitsu, you know, if I want to get better at jiu-jitsu, I need to work it. And I'm young in my career, so my opinion is for running, if I don't have zombies chasing me or something, I don't really need to run. So being on the mat is plenty of strenuous exercise for me. But
yeah, and
John, you want to jump back in with us?
Oh yeah, I most certainly do. That's one thing I like about these shows is because I get to listening, I get enthralled, and I forget I'm even on the radio. But you know, like we talked about earlier, you were one of the first few invited to compete at the 2018 IFBB Olympia. What would that moment? I mean, we look ahead. You know, we all do it. We all look ahead. We circumvent that moment in our mind. But what is it truly going to mean for you to wheel across the stage, compete, but not only as a warrior, but as a man in life? What is that moment truly going to mean to you and all the hard work and determination that you've put into that moment?
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. I mean, it's hard to put into words, especially because this is the first year that we've ever had the wheelchair division at the biggest tournament in the world, at the Super Bowl of bodybuilding. And something I was thinking about before I got that phone call was, okay, I definitely want to qualify for the Olympia one day and be up on the biggest stage in the world. But I thought, okay, maybe next year or the year after, you know, I'm not sure. So, and I always thought, like, I'm gonna love it whatever year I make it to the Olympia, but it kind of sucks to make it to the second time that we were at the Olympia, or the third, you know, and like, it'd be really special if I made it to the first Olympia ever for wheelchair, and then I got the call, you know? So just the fact that this is the first, and I get to be a part of that elite group of only 9 of us that, you know, get to kick off this next chapter of the sport, you know? We're kind of like in the Hoist Gracie days of wheelchair bodybuilding, you know? So to be part of that small group of 9 that kicks it off is, it's hard to put into words how special that is, you know?
Yeah, you talk about it as a chapter. It's truly is the defining of Tyler Bray, and it really is the circumventing of a legacy that you've already instilled, you know, from the moment you stepped into wrestling years ago. You know, we look at these moments and, you know, sometimes we reflect back on them. You know, when you get that opportunity to reflect back on your life, and now you get this tremendous opportunity to be with the best in the world, create this legacy, and write a new chapter, not just for you, but for all the people that follow you, because, you know, the rest will be predecessors. What does it truly mean to you in your heart as a man, not just as a warrior, but as a man, knowing that you've created this whole life, and not only have you created it, you can continue to invoke it, develop it, and now you've got this tremendous opportunity. What does this legacy mean to you?
I mean, for me, something I do think about a lot is, you know, setting the example, you know, being that person who makes anybody else who has some kind of disability, make them wonder, what can I do? Because I feel like so many people that have some kind of disability, they just listen to the world. They just listen to what other people tell them their abilities are, and then they just kind of run with it, and that's how it is. They never question it. And that's where I hope someone can look at these different things, and whether I win, I lose, I mean, some of these things that I've ventured into, I won and I've been successful. Some of them I got my butt kicked, but I still tried it, and I've still done a lot of things that a lot of people at first wouldn't think that, you know, a handicapped person should even try to do. And that's what, I guess that's what I would want my legacy to be, is, you know, make people question what their limits are, and don't be afraid to lose. Go give it a shot. Go find out what your limits are. Don't believe anybody, you know, don't believe opinions. Go get facts, you know?
Yeah. I like that, because if you can put an analogy on it, it's, you know, don't be history, create history. And that's what you truly are defining in your life. And that's to be commended. You know, hell, I wish I had the physique that you did. And I could walk around, you know, even though I'm missing my leg, I could still walk around. I wish I looked half as good as you, bro. I'm jealous.
Thanks.
I'll be honest with you.
I'm going to do the monsters this weekend, so.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that's one thing I kind of want to touch on. You know, we've touched on different aspects of your life and this and that, but, you know, the bodybuilding world, they've been pushing on me to do more and more shows, and I'm going to be doing that aspect. So I was really happy when Ronald brought you on the show. But there's a certain aspect that when I had a Connie Negro on, I don't know if you know who she is, but she was a tremendous, you know, athlete in bodybuilding and champion, and then she became a judge. You know, how is the judging going to be done in this competition? And do you think that because it's the first time ever in history that the judges will be capable of doing this type of event?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting with wheelchair bodybuilding. I mean, I'm fully confident that we're going to have, like, you know, the best judges in the world there, and they're going to do an amazing job judging all of us, and everybody will get the place that they deserve. But we are kind of an interesting place in the sport. Like I was saying, that, you know, we're in the baby stages of the sport, the Hoist Gracie days of it. And so there's a lot of things that still need to be figured out. You know, right now we only have wheelchair bodybuilding. We don't have physique. We don't have all these other divisions. We don't even really have, like, a bikini division, stuff for girls. Like, it's available, but it's not big yet. You know, all there really is wheelchair bodybuilding for right now. And so we're slowly growing. And then within just wheelchair bodybuilding or wheelchair physique, all these different divisions, you have to take into account what is the injury. With me, mine is a birth defect, but I'm still fully capable of getting a full six-pack and developing every muscle, right? but someone who's in a car accident, maybe their injury is a little higher, and they can get amazing chest and arms and back, but they're not capable of getting six-pack because they're not, they don't have any activation there. So you can't really judge us the same. So eventually there's going to be two different divisions for that down the road, but we're not quite there yet, you know? So that's, it's kind of interesting when it comes to judging the wheelchair division like that.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of also, you know, on the same parameters as para jiu-jitsu. I mean, you look at it, it's just in the infancy, and of course it's a little further along than the bodybuilding aspect, but man, my friend, you know, I sat here and I read your bio over and over and over again, and I told myself, I wanted to ask myself, you know, a question, and then I came up with an answer because I like digging deep into people on my show, you know, and I looked at the adversity and things that I've had to go through in my life, and I'm going to ask you a question. I've asked it a couple times before with a couple other guests, whether being abled or para. What do these three words mean to you in your walk in life, and that being pride, passion, and perseverance?
Pride, passion, and perseverance?
Yes, sir.
And that's, I mean, you can look at it like that's words to live by. You know, I think that's kind of, you know, that's the main thing that people lack. That's one of the main things that any successful person has is that attitude, you know, and then anybody who isn't successful, well, they're probably being a victim in some way, you know, like everybody has a hard life, some people harder than others, but no matter how different our lives are and what challenges we got to deal with, the answer is always the same. You have to have the mentality to overcome anything that life throws at you. You know, don't compare yourself to somebody else. Oh, my life is harder than his, so I have an excuse to fail. Like, no, you don't. You're a victim, you know? Like, that person is going to be more successful than you because they're not a victim, you know? So that's where, like, some people have talked to me about doing, like, a motivational speaking, and they wanted me to talk to some people who got into, like, car accidents and stuff like that, and maybe they just got into the car accident 6 months ago or something, and they're still grieving about it, and they're trying to figure out how to, you know, move on from there. And I never said no, but I felt a little unworthy at first because I thought, well, my situation's not like that. I don't miss walking because I never had it. This 25-year-old who was in a car crash, he misses walking. You know, maybe he was a star soccer player and now that's gone, you know, or something like that. So at first I kind of felt underqualified to speak to people who are in a totally different situation like that. But eventually I realized, in a way, it doesn't matter. The answer is the same. Every single one of us need to have that attitude. You need to have those things you were talking about, that perseverance, that mental toughness, and overcome whatever life that throws at you. Literally, truly have no excuses. When you say no excuses, truly mean it. No exceptions, you know? You don't think that your obstacles are special and you have it harder than anybody else. No, you have obstacles and you need to figure out how to overcome them, period. There is no other option.
I like that. You know, you amaze me, my friend. Ron, I'm sure you got a couple of questions. I'm going to kind of take that in a little bit. This is a little bit of a humbling show for me.
It certainly is, Don. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to jump here. I've got to get to the academy so Professor Yamasaki doesn't take me out on the mat and instruct me a little bit. So, Tyler, man, 30 minutes is not enough. We have to have you back on. Please, after your competition, please reserve some time. I know you're a busy man. You've got full life on top of it, but we would love to have you back. I mean, the aspect that you bring to this show of cross sports and the intensity that you bring is just very powerful, and it has been a great show for me. I'm going to jump now, but I wanted to say thank you. Like, when you were talking about, you know, you wanted to maximize yourself, and, you know, was it going to be personal or societal? You know, I don't think it really matters for you. You've overcome every limitation, I think, that's been put in front of you. And so as I say thank you and as I sign off, I wanted to let you know, you know, I don't think that you're only a warrior, but an example for a life well lived, brother.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'll go ahead and wrap things up here in a minute, Ron. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Don.
Get there before Professor gives you the boot.
I'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you.
All right, brother. You know, I just got a few more questions for you. You know,
sure.
You know, it's truly been inspiring for me to have you on. You know, I look at my life and, you know, I had a lot of doubts. You know, I'll give you kind of a quick synopsis into who I am. I got my master's in engineering science, and I ended up a boxing photographer, and then I transitioned into the sport of MMA as a fighter / boxer, and I lost my leg, and you know, I gave up on a lot of aspects in life, and I didn't really realize that what I was really searching for came after the loss of my limb, you know, and it really defined me. I was given excuses why I couldn't do things, but it took a fighter to pull me out of my shell and reinstill, you know, the values that I never really had lost but had given up hope on. And, you know, seeing that you were born this way and maintaining the attitude that you have, it's to be commendable, man. I don't get very many guests on here that truly just leave me stymied. Cole left me stymied, and now you leave me stymied, and that's a tremendous thing. You know, when this happens for you, I wish you the best of luck, because look at everything that we've talked about on today's show. This truly is a pivotal moment in your life. It's the birth of a new sport. It's an added aspect to who you are in life. And we can only gain and grow from those types of things that are given to us. If you had a message for the youth or the younger individuals that are listening to the show today about what it means to stay motivated and what it means to chase your dreams, what would that statement be, my friend?
That's a tough one, because I feel like I could talk forever about that one. I mean, it's about just having that overall mental strength, not having any excuses, not giving in to any excuses. Whatever life throws at you, don't think that, oh, your problems are special and now you have an excuse to fail. You know, if you're growing up in a terrible home, you had terrible parents, or you had no parents, or, you know, you had some crazy upbringing, like, okay, that's horrible, you didn't deserve that, but that's not an excuse to fail, and it's not an excuse to not be a good person. You know, like, whatever your situation is, if you're in a wheelchair like me, or you have whatever kind of disabilities or disadvantages in life, you need to figure out a way to get around them. Do not let yourself fail. You know, don't give yourself that out. Don't give yourself an excuse to fail. Truly live by that no excuses attitude. I'm going to succeed. There is no second option, you know? So just, I mean, be hard on yourself. But, you know, have grace with yourself. You're human. Rest when you need to rest. It's okay to fail. But, you know, but don't justify, you know, excuses in your head.
Most definitely, my friend. And, you know, in your bio, you put you're going to be along with the best wheelchair bodybuilders in the world. My friend, you're already there. you just haven't realized it yet. You truly are. You know what you...
These guys look amazing.
Yeah, but so do you. You know what? But a shell is a shell, but a heart is a heart. And the heart is truly what defines who we are, and that's who our soul truly is. And you have a very unique soul, and I'm very blessed that you came on today's show. It's been very humbling. You know, no matter what happens at the Olympia, you're already a champion in my eyes, brother. And I know you're going to do well, but I just want to let you know you're already a champion in my eyes. You know, Taylor, it was truly an honor to have you on today's show. I'm going to pass the microphone over to you. If you have any friends or family, social media sites or sponsors, or just anything else that you would like to add to the program, the floor is yours, man.
Thanks.
Friend.
Thanks. I'm a personal trainer in Roseville. You can see any of my information on that on my social medias. On Instagram, it's @TylerBray_PT. TylerBray_IFBB_PT. And then shout out to my sponsors at Evo Gin and Iron Company. And yeah.
Well, you know, my friend, it was most definitely a true honor to have you on today's show.
Yeah.
I look forward
to having
you back on and sharing more of your story. I think Ron's right. You know, the time that we allotted you today wasn't even enough to touch the surface into the things that you've done in life. Keep inspiring individuals. And my brother, you know what? You need to be a motivational speaker because you motivated me. And, you know, I'm impressed by the intellectual ability and the talent that you've ascertained and all the things that you've done in the sport. You've got a story to tell. Share it with the world, my friend. On that note, Tyler, I'd like to thank you for joining the show, and you have a tremendous afternoon, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's truly been my honor. God bless you, and you have a tremendous afternoon.
All right, you too.
All right, bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Tyler Bray getting ready to compete in the 2018 IFBB Olympia. It'd be history-making, as it's the first time ever they've added a wheelchair division, and it's the most prestigious bodybuilding competition in the world. I wish him the best of luck, but he's already a champion in my eyes and in my heart. Thank you, Ronald, man, for making that happen. Man, these para-athletes, I'll tell you what, they truly touch me. On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA with Juan Martinez. It's my brother in life and my family. The 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. The same to be said about them. Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitcher-Ran and Juan Ramirez. Truly the best Cutman supplies in the world. Hit up Cutmanforhiresupplies.com. And last but not least, Buy Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. One of the best mouth guards in the business. I don't put anybody's name on it. Excuse me, I can't talk today. I don't put anybody's name on my back, but I'm gladly and I'm honored to share their name with you and wear their name on my back. With that being said, and me being tongue-tied, it's been a long day. I've been doing show after show. I want to wish everybody a tremendous night. Have a good day, and God bless.
I'm in the booth. I'm in the booth. Say something on the mic. Booth. Say something heavy.
Whip on, might get deported. Fish me alive, less than anointed. Broke this at 111, recorded. Clock struck 12, bank on Warner. Might sound with